It makes me like put my teeth out.
Yeah.
My teeth come out.
Wait, show me what that looks like for you. You're like a
It's a
clench.
clench.
Yeah.
I try to like put my incisors a little bit forward, but it's like
Oh,
a
yeah.
like curled lip.
Yeah.
I'm Allison Hagendorf. America, this is the next. Hello, Times Square. Games Aspen. I'm Allison Hagendorf. I'm the live announcer of the VMAs. Welcome to Rock This with Allison Hagendorf.
Yeah, this is Allison Hagendorf.
Hello, my fellow music lovers, and welcome to the Allison Hagendorf Show.
Hello, my fellow music lovers, and welcome to the Allison Hagendorf Show. This is where we celebrate the universal love of music and the rock and roll spirit that lives in each of us. I am so glad you're here. We're coming to you from DWP Studios, and I want to give a shout out to our presenting sponsor, Cloudwater, our partners at Sweetgrass Vodka, and our friends at Karma Sauce. These are three quality products I love. They're all part of my life and help make this show possible along with you. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. Saint Vincent is my guest today. She is not only a musician, a songwriter, a producer, but she's a trailblazer. She's an innovator and a pioneer. What always fascinates me about people who are such unique creators is that they have the ability to really trust their own instinct. And that is a true gift and a skill. Now, I'm not a Grammy Award-winning artist, but I think we all have the ability to harness this feeling within ourselves. You have to trust your gut and listen to your intuition. Now, there is a story of mine that comes to mind, and I can truly recall this as a turning point for me taking my own advice. I am blessed with incredible parents. They have always showered me with love and have always been in my corner. And now, as an adult even, more than ever, they have also set an incredible example for me of how to raise my own boys. But there is this one story. I have shared that before I chose a career in music and entertainment, I wanted to be a doctor. Now, at this point, I was still exploring veterinary science. So I had an interview at a wildlife rehab center to work with the animals. I was a teenager, still living with my parents, and my dad hears interview and tells me I need to wear a suit for it. Now, granted, my dad worked on Wall Street and we were like living very different worlds. In my heart of hearts, I just didn't think I was supposed to wear a suit, nor did I own one. But my dad, in trying to help me out, insisted. So I went ahead and bought a blazer with a matching skirt from like Contempo Casuals at the mall, which was sort of a Forever 21 type store before there was Forever 21. He then kindly drives me to the interview. He waits for me in the parking lot. He's the best. Now, because we're at a wildlife rehab center, the office is literally in the woods. It's in a state park. And I am wearing pumps, this cheesy pinstripe blazer and a skirt, walking through actual trails to the office. I finally get to the office door and I open it up and there's my interviewer, Jen, who is wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt and has a massive nose piercing. I immediately apologize for being so overdressed and I tell her the whole story. And although she laughed, I knew in that moment from here on out, I absolutely had to go with my gut. And that although I love my parents, I had to start being my own person. Being in tune with my intuition has served me well and pointed me in the right direction when the path was not always clear. Still though, big shout out to my dad, whose heart was in the right place, even if his style choices were not. I love you, Dad. Okay, coming up after this short break, we have Saint Vincent right here in the studio. Stay tuned. To introduce you to one of my co-stars of the Allison Hagendorf Show. This is Cloudwater CBD line. They also have their Peace, Love, and Energy, as well as Daily Defense. What is great about this one is that it's infused with 25 milligrams of bioavailable CBD. It comes in five gorgeous flavors. Now, usually CBD drinks are kind of gross. This one is watermelon and ginger, chef's kiss, and is lightly sweetened with organic wildflower honey, so it doesn't have that gross synthetic aftertaste. Now, after a long day, I love to drink one of these to unwind and relax. Give it a try and let me know what you think. Go to cloudwaterbrands.com. Use my promo code Allison30 to get 30% off. And you can also find out where to buy it at a store near you. Cheers. My guest today is a triple Grammy Award-winning musician, singer, songwriter, and producer. Rolling Stone recently named her one of the greatest guitarists of all time. She is an innovator, a visionary, and an artist in a league all her own. St. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I am so thrilled to be sitting here with you because I've always viewed you as such a special and unique artist. But this new album is resonating with me in such a special way. It is so primal and raw and hard and noisy and beautiful and vulnerable. All of these things. It feels like you poured everything you have into this album. Is this how it feels for you?
That I would say is a fair statement. That what I would say. Everything I have, blood, sweat, tears, and a lot of time.
It feels it. Yeah. I when I listen to the album, I can feel like visceral emotion and being. Like it makes me like put my teeth out.
Yeah.
My teeth come out.
Wait, show me what that looks like for you. You're like a clench.
It's a clench.
Yeah.
I try to like put my incisors a little bit forward.
Oh,
but it's like a like curled lip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that way from this album.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, what was like the intention for it? Because what's so cool, this is your first time self-producing. You've co-produced all of your albums.
Yeah.
Why was it important for you and essential for you to, I'm gonna perform and I'm gonna produce this all myself?
Well, so I was lucky enough to be, 14 years old and begin recording myself. So I was like 14, and it's like a little Tascam cassette recorder, of course, first.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, rewind it. Play, da-da-da. we know the drill. But then I was my stepdad got me with the help of my uncle Tuck, who's a great musician and engineer, like an early something called Cakewalk Pro Audio on a PC, and it was like early digital recording software. So I've been recording myself in my room since I was 14 or 15, right? So that's always been part of my process. It's how I learned what I sounded like, because recording is such a harsh mirror.
Yeah.
And it's how I learned how to arrange and think about music. And it's kind of a different experience than being like, coming up and just being in garage bands or something. I mean, I did some of that too, but music was always kind of this solitary little place I had in my room. So I've worked with other people and co-produced all my records, my own records. But this time, I was like, with this material, with this kind of place I need to go emotionally, and also just the ideas in my head, I just need to buckle down and be my own producer completely and have no one else in the room going, yeah, that's good, we got it, move on. It's like, no, only I know when it's really there. And it's sort of like I had, in some ways, a specific picture in my head. So it's like you can't ask anybody else to paint it for you. And that took me, that took me down the road of taking engineering lessons from my engineer and being more self-sufficient and being able to be like completely self-sufficient in the studio. That meant, sitting there with my modulars and my drum machines and just setting everything up and going like, sound is hidden intention. I'm going to find sounds that light me up inside and follow those. And so I think that was a very long-winded answer to your question, but just to say that like, it's so natural for me to be in a room by myself making recording music,
But I love that this position made you become more of a student as well, to learn so that you can empower yourself further, that you can be more in control. That's so cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, I've always known Pro Tools and, been able to do that part of it myself. But to go, the sound is meaning. And so everything on the record, the sound is adding up to part of the meaning of the song.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why something sounds claustrophobic. There's a reason why something sounds distorted. There's a reason why this is in the background, because it's like it all has to add up
to the kind of soul of the song.
Oh my God. Everything has an intention.
Yeah.
Every single breath, every note. And it feels that way.
Oh, thank you.
It really feels that way.
Thank you.
Before we go on to the music itself, did you learn anything about yourself in this process? Because this is definitely kind of going into one next level of the evolution, you know, as an artist and producer.
I learned a couple things. I learned that I might be, like, I'm incredibly, bless poor Michael Meisel, who's in there, who will tell you, like, I'm incredibly impatient in certain ways, but I'm crazy patient in others. And I learned that I almost self-diagnose myself from the internet, but I might have some sort of neurodivergence or attention thing, because my brain works all things at all times.
Yeah.
And putting all those pieces together, I don't think very linearly.
I see.
And yeah. I jump around a lot. But I mean, I don't want to pathologize
right,
that.
Right,
I just
right,
learned,
right.
like, oh, maybe,
that's interesting.
Maybe that's not how everybody works.
Right, got it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool. You're kind of like, oh, this is kind of how my brain works. And this might be unique to me.
Yeah.
You have called the music post-plague pop.
Oh,
I mean, how great is that?
You know what? I do have to say, what I love about that quote is the alliteration.
Right.
What I don't love about the quote, and I'm sort of kicking myself for saying it, is that, one, who wants to remind people of the problem?
Yeah.
Right. But also, when I think about this record, I mean, it's pop in the sense of it has melodies that are memorable.
Right.
But it's not.
It's
pop.
Not. It's not at all.
It's not like.
It's actually genreless.
Oh.
And that's what I'm so amazed by this body of work, because I would say that it represents everything. It goes in each, but not even each song, within each song is a journey. But I want to start off by talking about two of my favorite songs, of course, is Broken Man and Flea.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. And I love that Dave Grohl.
Who?
We love you, Dave.
Who?
Love you, Dave. Yeah. I love that Dave Grohl is on drums and a part of the song. Why were these two songs kind of meant for Dave's participation?
Well, one thing about Dave that I'm sure you know is that he's a great drummer because he's a great songwriter.
Yes.
And he brings the craziest, most atomic amount of power to a song, but he doesn't step on it. He doesn't
right.
step on the song. He doesn't overplay the song. He, like, takes the thing and goes like, cool, this was at a 7, now it's at a 36.
Right.
Like, he just blows it out of the water in that way. And I think that kind of chops plus taste and, like, sensitivity and soul, like, that's just, that combination so rarely happens. So anyway, there's a song called Flea, and I hit him up because, you know, we've been buddies for a while, and I just was like, hey, you're the only person who should play this song. Would you? I'll send it to you. And yeah, he, you know, rolled up, had probably listened to this. I don't know how, you know, listened to it a few times on the way over, and he's kind of smoking Parliaments and, you know, drinking all the espresso in the world and telling great, as you know, telling great stories. And
best
we're just like chilling.
Teller.
I'm just like, this is a big role. And we're like, we're telling more stories and we're like laughing and having a great time. And then he's sort of like, you know, okay, let's go. And it goes in and he just fucking nails it. He knew the song inside and out. And it was just like a crazy emotional experience to hear somebody who's work is the reason why you're a musician, right?
Aww.
Like, and have it kind of come, you know,
this full
360
circle, yeah.
to 720, like,
right,
know.
Right, 720, yeah.
Yeah, go around like that. And then I had him play at the end of Broken Man because it, there's another great drummer on that track, Mark Juliana, but it was like, this song, you know, it kind of starts here and then it goes here. And then I was like, it needs to go one
right.
more level up. And
Dave,
so
level.
Dave
level.
Yeah.
Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And talking about full circle moments, you fronted Nirvana.
Yeah.
at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
Yeah.
And it was for Lithium.
Yeah.
And I remember that performance so clearly and how awesome it was. What was that experience like?
Oh, good God.
I can't imagine.
It still kind of makes me want to cry thinking about it for a number of reasons. Like, you know, I remember being 9 years old and my best friend Doug's older brother, who was cool and had cool taste in music and who was already like, you know, hey, check out Bad Brains. Like, hey, check out DC Punk.
Amazing.
Like, you know, it was already on it and showing us cool stuff. But he, like, we're in his front yard. They'd built a half pipe for, you know, for skateboarding. And, like, Paul, Doug's brother, comes out and he's got this boom box. And he plays Nevermind. And it was, we were just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, whoa. Everything changed. And that was, and I loved music already. I was obsessed with music. But that was the first music that was like, no, that's ours. That's yes. That's for us. That's our generation. Chills. That's for us. So, you know, cut to being asked to be a part of inducting them. I mean, it's fucking bittersweet, man, because everybody just wishes Kurt was alive. That's the thing that's hard to sort of even, you know, just like, well, I shouldn't be here.
He should be here.
But to sort of step into that, and I mean, they made me, you know, Dave and Chris and Pat, like, made me feel so
that's awesome.
Welcome and all, you know, and so warm. It was just such a family vibe, and the actual performance, I blacked out. I have no idea what happened. You'll just have to look for evidence of that on YouTube. I have no idea.
I actually watched it again yesterday. Okay. And you were great. Thanks. I loved your hair. Like, I feel like you were so in the moment. You can tell that you were really in the moment. I mean, that is tough to do, you know? And you did a great job.
Thank you. You really did.
I feel the exact same way by hearing, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit and Nevermind as an album. And just like... It like you said, it was ours.
It's ours.
It was ours. And I've loved music since the womb, you know, but hearing that was different.
I know.
And it changed me forever.
And it changed culture in a way that I've never seen since.
Same. I mean, that was it. We're very lucky.
Yeah.
We're very lucky that we got to have that.
Yeah.
And also it's a testament to it because now younger generations where it wasn't theirs love it. Love it.
Of course, because it's timeless. Those songs are timeless. That energy is timeless. They will stand the test of time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you and Dave had another special moment when you did the Nine Inch Nails Piggy cover.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, everyone was thrilled. I was so psyched for that.
Thanks.
But I feel like that was like an appetizer.
Yeah.
For this like Nine Inch Nails industrial vibe that I hear on these, on Flea and Broken Man in particular.
Yeah.
Because not every song, but those two in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Is this an intentional thing? I feel like it's like the Saint Vincent. Yeah. It's like your Nine Inch Nails, like, moment.
Well, like, as a person who is obsessed with sound and production, you don't get better than the downward spiral.
Yeah.
You put that on today next to anything, it sounds totally modern. And it's the same thing. You hear the level, it's violent and it's complicated and it's raw, but it's sonically perfect. Yes. And that's what I was going for on this record. Like, it's sonically perfect. It's intentional. It's not, well, I guess we'll do it a little. It's like, right. No, if it's there, if it's on the record, then it is supposed to be there. Yeah.
I told you, I received it that way.
Thank you so much. I really am so glad.
So it's like Broken Man and Flea. I was like, oh my God. But then take a song like Reckless.
Mm.
And this is a song where for about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, it's like this build. It's this build. And then all of a sudden there's silence and it crescendos into like this like apocalyptic doomsday release. I literally made an audible noise at that part.
It's a jump scare.
It is. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And like, that's the thing about you is like, you are, I think what's predictable about you is that you're unpredictable. Like just because you hear Broken Man and Flea, oh, you have absolutely no idea. Like even within a song, Reckless, oh, this, you can't skip the song because like I said, 2 minutes and 40 seconds, mm-hmm. it's like a totally different feeling. When you have songs like that, is this like, did you think or did it just sort of come out that way? Like, I'm like interested in your process.
Well, a song like Reckless, the yes, there is that build, that reckoning with sort of up close, you know, bereavement, or there's a rending and a shift. And so a song like Reckless, like, well, then of course the music has to become reckless, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's always a balance, I think, for me, because sometimes it's about going there with your voice and your voice being the thing. But sometimes it's just like, no, you lay back and you let the music, you let the music do it. And that it represents a sort of like a weight and a shattering and, you know, sort of crossing a Rubicon in a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm like looking at my notes, 'cause I actually took notes on like every song, but,
You are the most prepared and effusive I have encountered thus far, and I really appreciate it.
No, I tell you, I'm very serious. I'm intense. Yeah. But like then you had something like Big Time Nothing, mm-hmm. and then it's just completely, it's like funky.
Yeah.
It's funk. It's soulful. It's like, okay, let's go, you know? So like just to go from like something like that to this, like I'd love to hear more about this song as well and just sort of like your mindset for it.
Well, that song was, the genesis of it was me playing with my modulars, mm-hmm. and probably jamming for 3 hours and then going, oh, wait, that thing I did that goes, like, that's lightning in a bottle. Like, that makes me feel like, that makes me feel like the Prodigy or like, Firestarter, like, but also like Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Like,
oh! God,
that's the rhythm, like Rhythm Nation is like,
I can't, I like need to like, I can't right? with you.
But like, it's, I love the sound of it. It's crazy.
The fact that you just mentioned Prodigy and like Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, like we're twins.
Yeah.
We are sonic soulmates.
That
I
is,
can't.
Right?
Oh but, my God.
But those things are, they are speaking to each other.
Of course.
They're speaking to each other. I mean, so with Big Time Nothing, you know, I was like, okay, what's the, and so there's, that's, I mean, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and Rhythm Nation is why there's like bent orchestra hits,
you know? I appreciate it. I danced to that song. Yeah, okay, I danced to that. That one's like the dance.
Yeah.
That's like the new Jack Swing.
Yes.
You know, it's total new Jack Swing, which I love. I love that.
Yeah.
Do you dance? Well, of course you dance. Okay. Wait, sorry. Going back to the Broken Man video.
Oh, yeah.
The choreography in that?
Oh, yeah.
Was that, like, did you do that yourself? Like, it was
a combo.
Combo.
Platter. So, one of my dear friends and collaborators for many years, Annie B. Parson, who I met working with David Byrne.
Okay.
She choreographed the Love This Giant tour that we did and had done things with David before. She did American Utopia, David,
awesome.
You know.
Yes.
So, I love Annie B. I love her choreography so much. So I got her involved for the Broken Man video, and my friend Alex DeCorte, who directed and also did the creative direction of the album artwork. It was, you know, it was days of me, Annie B, Alex in rehearsal and kind of going, you know, you know, I the thing and
yeah.
The choreo was sort of, you know, because I'm not really on fire. I hate to break it to you. I tried, but actually I'm cheap and it was cost prohibitive to do it. I would have done it. I've done worse for art. But so it's this sort of like It's a literal fire dance, right? So it's
Yeah.
like, okay, there's this. You're like, where?
Yeah.
Okay, it's there. Okay, so what? Oh, it's there. Okay. And then it gets, the fire builds
Yeah.
progressively. So it was a dance between camera, some Annie B movement, and then me and my own
I
sort of instincts. But
There were like little like cabaret sort of like
oh, it's
moments. Yeah, like
grotesque.
that,
Yes,
right. Like
like
it just was
this
like
to me is
those.
like, oh, Daddy, do you love me now? Am I pretty
Yeah,
now?
exactly.
It's like, so it's just like disturbed, but then it's
Yeah,
like, ugh.
right.
And then it's sharp, and then it's, you know, it's just
Yeah.
supposed to be. So that, and that made all that, it physically just kind of, it made sense. And then there's all, obviously, just to give shout outs where shout outs are due, like a deep reverence for Robert Longo,
Okay.
you know, and
Yes.
Longo's,
Yes.
you know,
Right.
people.
Of course.
So the rending and the twisting and sort of like office gear.
Yeah.
Like,
So
did she
dumb.
just come from catering an
Right.
event, or that's nice that the caterer came and did a little dance
You
for
had
us.
great white booties in it, so
Yes,
which obviously
exactly.
I
Thank
love.
you.
So,
Yes.
oh my
Yeah.
God, that is amazing.
Yeah.
I also wanted to talk about Sweetest Fruit, which again has its own sonic stamp. And it's just like so instant. And I know it's an ode to Sophie.
Yeah, I never knew Sophie. I was a fan from afar, and I'm very aware of like, there's no world where I would ever want to be. I was almost reticent to say that it was an ode to her because I didn't want it to seem, you know, crass. Like there's an aspect to that that could seem like, if looked at in bad faith, could seem like exploitative or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of bad faith ways to look at it. But after Sophie passed, I guess her team, her people put out this statement that was like she was climbing a rooftop after you know, a night, a fun night out in Athens, and she was climbing to try to get a better look at the moon, and she fell. But I was thinking to myself, like, well, that's incredibly tragic and all, but also like poetic. Like she was trying to, she was reaching for it, you know? And there's something really, just really beautiful about that, that idea to me, not the fact that, but I was thinking to myself, like, well, wow, I mean, for a minute, what of you? Like,
I know. You're right. It's obviously horrifically tragic, but very poetic and beautiful to trying to get a closer view of this moon. It just shows what the artistry and what a visionary Sophie was, just on every level, you know? Wow. And sonically, I just love the song.
Oh,
It's so
thanks.
good. It's like that one's just like a totally different, you know, vibe. Like how did that come together sonically?
That was another one that I that it was based on a modular loop that was like do 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 do
Yes.
do 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 do,
So
but a little like
effective.
out of tune and sort of other. And I was like, there's a song there. I'm gonna find it.
So it started with that.
And then I just like, I felt like, you know, she was coming from a club. She'd been dancing. She was probably like sweaty and in a good mood. And I was just like, okay, this song needs to, this is not a dirge. This is like, we're moving. This is body moving. Yeah.
It's such a good song.
Thanks.
The concluding title track, All Born Screaming, Kate Laban.
Yes.
She's the one billed feature.
Yes, yes, yeah.
And I feel like you and Kate have like a really special
Oh,
relationship.
she's one of my best friends in the whole world.
Oh.
I saw her for dinner a couple nights ago before she left town. She deserves the world. Like, she's just such a great artist, such a great songwriter, such a great producer in her own right. And, you know, we've just been friends forever, and she's sort of everything that I'm not in as a person. She's like patient and, you know, and I'm like, I want to hear that chorus again. Cause, you know, and she's like, no, it would, yeah.
And yeah, she was just immensely helpful as a presence, just because I was in the weeds making the record, and I kind of played it for her and was like, you know, what? And she's like, you're crazy, but you're not crazy. Like,
Right.
keep going.
She was like your soundboard and your support.
Yeah, she was very, very supportive and helpful, and ended up singing on All Born Screaming, playing bass on All Born Screaming, and working on a number of other tracks too.
There's a lyric, and I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember exactly what it was, but something about the karaoke version of Hallelujah, right? So tell me about that, because it also made me think of something I saw you say,
Oh,
which
Jesus. They're always gonna get that when you're like the one time you're like, yeah,
Well,
I'm gonna just be an asshole and tell you what I
no,
really
you're
think.
just, you were just saying that you it like pains you, it's sacrilegious when certain like, you know, competition shows like cover like such a classic that is so nuanced, like Hallelujah, which I understand.
I feel that there are some lovely versions of Hallelujah, which I will name.
Jeff Buckley's.
Jeff Buckley, Rufus Wainwright,
Yes.
John Cale.
Right, John Cale, right.
All day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
But yes, because there's certainly a number of lyrics on the record that are self-loathing or self-lacerating. That is the most insulting one that I lo lobbed at myself. Of being a karaoke version of Lynyrd's Hallelujah. That was mean.
I get it. I get
Yeah.
it. But the ones that you referenced that are incredible, I mean, I think that Jeff Buckley's version, there are certain times that sometimes the covers take on a whole new meaning than the original, you
Absolutely.
know? And I personally think that Jeff Buckley's version is one of those.
I
I think
agree.
that his is a masterpiece.
I could not agree more. And I mean, that record, Grace,
Grace,
is a masterpiece.
start to finish.
Yeah. I mean, I also remember the first time, speaking of, you know, hearing Bon, I
Yes.
remember the first time I heard Grace too, and you're just like,
And he and then like then I saw like what he looked like, and just I was
oh,
like, how does this happen?
I
He's the, I had a
know.
poster of him on my
Oh,
wall.
I'm
I did.
sure
I
you
did. It was
did.
I had Kurt and Jeff Buckley.
Absolutely, you did.
I did.
And I think when he was living in France at a certain time, right? And I bet he just crushed puss. I bet he just had
Crushed
just
it.
all. I just was dating
Living his
everyone.
best life as he should. I mean, I, God, Jeff
Oh,
Buckley,
God.
one of a kind. I often tell people you need to know Jeff Buckley's Grace. You just need to know it. It's like
That's
homework.
no,
Just
absolutely.
everyone needs to just know it inside and out.
Absolutely. And you hear what I one thing I love about Jeff Buckley's Grace is you hear his love for Nina Simone.
Oh, yes. See, that's a good example of taking your influences and celebrating them.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually a really great example. Oh God, we love so many of the
I
same
know.
things. I can't even take it.
Oh.
You recorded a lot of this album at Electric Lady Studios, which is so iconic. You know, does the energy, you know, from Hendrix, Bowie, Stevie Wonder, of course, and like the history, does that serve as a muse for you? Are you sort of spiritual like that, or were you just excited about the technical
Oh,
capabilities, you
no,
know?
that Electric Lady has a soul, but I recorded most of the vocals
Right,
for
okay.
this album at Electric Lady because I found that in my studio, it just wasn't conducive to like recording lead keeper vocals because
Right.
I there's something about like, well, I can always hit it tomorrow. There's, you know, it's like, no, you are paying for time, you are
Yes, it's
coming
like the
in.
highest stakes.
The stakes are
Yes.
high. I did most of it in B, which I love B. It's the one that's sort of underground and
Yes.
closest to the water pump because that Electric Lady is literally on top of like a river called like Devil's Creek.
Oh
And
my
there's a
God.
water pump running 24/7 to make sure that the studio doesn't flood.
Right.
Right. So
Okay.
it's sort of like, yeah,
That's interesting.
ancient
That I
Native
did not know.
American
That I did not
burial
know.
ground
Okay.
like
Yeah.
vibe. And so I love working there
Yes, obviously because of the gear, but also because of the soul of the place. My buddy Lee runs it. And then also there's just something, I like a studio where time goes away and it's a totally dark room and you don't know if it's day or night. I like that. Some people are like, you know, want to see.
Well, then you can just be so in the moment, right? No distractions. Yeah, I get that.
So that's where I did most of the keeper, the leads, you know.
I have my own story there where I'm a massive U2 fan.
I love U2.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Massive. And talk about like live shows, like the best, like when it comes to production and putting on a show and becoming a religious experience. And I love U2.
Yeah.
And I was the head of Rock at Spotify at the time, and they put out an album. And in true Bono fashion, he had heard like what a fan I was, like how they, and he literally serenaded me. Like we were playing back the album. It was Songs of Experience. And I knew the album inside and out, as you can now I did.
I see this about you.
And he was like told that Allison's a big fan. She knows the album. And he was like serenading me. Oh, and I was like, what's happening right now? You know, it was one of those out of body experiences that like, I just was like, let me just soak this up. It's like weird, but amazing. And like, you know, those artists, you know, it's neural nostalgia. It's the artists or the pop culture that you're introduced to, usually ages 12 to 22, that physically become a part of you because you're developing, you know, like neurology is developing so quickly that you'll never feel that way again. Like you'll never be that. It's imprinting.
Yeah.
And U2 is that band from one of.
Sure.
Nirvana, Jeff Buckley are all in that same vein. But 12, that is when you started playing guitar, That's amazing. So what was it that inspired you to start playing so young?
You know, it's funny. In my life, I don't think about that as young, but then I have nieces and nephews who are 12, and I think, what must my parents have thought? What, like, I could imagine one of them just, like, locking themselves in the room with a guitar.
Right.
That must have been sort of, I don't know.
Well, because you also, not only just you start playing, you were focused.
Yeah, I was so obsessed with it. I was obsessed.
You weren't just kind of playing a couple of chords, like, I could play this one. Yeah.
Writing songs, learning songs. What got me in was, God bless, just, I was watching Forrest Gump. And you know how there's a Hendrix...
Doesn't she play at some point? Or am I making this up?
She does. I have complicated feelings about Forrest Gump upon rewatching.
But
the soundtrack, there's Jimmy does Dylan's All Along the Watchtower.
Yeah.
And I was like,
another example where the cover
that
then becomes,
exactly. Yeah. So I was like, okay, not, I'm going, saving up money, going to the store and buying, you know, the ultimate experience, which I guess was
it was like a deluxe.
Yeah. It was Jimi Hendrix Ultimate Experience. It was just like, this is lightning in a bottle. Do that. But it was also, I was already obsessed with Nirvana and grunge.
Yeah.
And, you know, rock music. So, but I think the thing that really like was just like, get a guitar was Jimmy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My son's name is Cole Hendrix. We are big Jimmy fans in our family.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. The Forrest Gump soundtrack was absolutely everything. Yeah. Soundtracks were such a big deal then. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they were everything.
Pulp Fiction, Dazed and Confused.
Reality Bites. I mean, that was the
best.
I know.
I still cry at the end of that movie.
Same. I still listen to the soundtrack. I know. So we have similar references.
No, absolutely.
But didn't you also see La Bamba? And seeing Richie Valens.
I saw La Bamba when I was 5. And, and that he has that red Stratocaster. Yes. And I was obsessed with it. My parents were divorced. My mom was a social worker. I desperately wanted this red guitar from Target. Which, like, didn't play. It was just a toy guitar. But I would beg and beg and beg. But I think it was, like, expensive. It was, like, $20. Which is the most money you'd ever heard of at that time. Like, that's absolutely not... but my mom, bless her, eventually relented and got me a little toy guitar after I had made guitars and guitars and guitars out of cardboard and like rubber bands, you know?
Yes, of course.
Just art project after art project. So the seed was planted quite young.
But I love that because, first of all, La Bamba is one of the greatest movies. Yeah. It really, really is. And I actually have the same, just I can picture Ritchie Valens with that guitar.
Yeah.
So I totally get that. Also, I just want to talk about La Bamba. It's just one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring it up. You need to go. Do you remember, besides the guitar and Ritchie Valens, do you remember like that final scene of like the funeral where it's like Sleepwalk by Santo and Johnny is playing and it's like the steel guitars and it's this like, I watched it again yesterday and I was like hysterically crying.
No, I
need to like send you the link.
Will you send me the link? Because I need to rewatch that because I
need
think
to
it's
rewatch
been
it.
Years.
I think that was one of the first times I've always been obsessed with music marrying with film or mm-hmm. music video. Like I love that and just how powerful it can be. As powerful as a song is when it's matched with video, like even like Smells Like Teen Spirit,
yeah.
hearing it and then seeing the video mm-hmm. was a whole other level of experience,
totally.
You know?
Totally.
So in La Bamba, at the end, during the funeral procession, it's Santo and Johnny Sleepwalk, and it's this beautiful song, and it's the most painful thing, and I fell in love with steel guitar just from that sound.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
I was also a little girl, and I just was like, I love everything about this music.
Mm-hmm.
But it also makes sense that you love Ritchie Valens because he was a pioneer. He was, you know, he was one of the forefathers of the Spanish-speaking rock mm-hmm. and roll movement. And you are a pioneer. You know, you have always done your own thing. Was that something that you set out to do? Or was it something that just sort of, like, happened because this was just your path?
I didn't have another option. I just have always just followed what excites me. I've always just followed the music and hoped that anything that happened as a byproduct of making something obsessively that I love, you know, anything else is like a bonus.
Right.
So, and also, you know, I've had the kind of career where like I first put out record of my first record is in like 2007, and it was a little, you know, it was indie style and indie records, and so it's just I've kind of gone like this, and I'm just lucky that I'm 7 solo records in and people care more now than they did then,
because mm-hmm.
that's
right.
what, you know
right.
we know we've seen
right.
we've seen people come and go, right?
Yes.
So it's just kind of I feel very lucky that I've learned how to be a better artist while people are still paying attention.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because it's about the art. It's about the art.
It is.
Yeah.
I know that sounds so fucking kumbaya.
It's not, though.
It's about the work. The work has to be excellent. You don't have to like... I mean, I'm not saying people have to like what I do, but, like, for whatever internal compass I have that's, like, this is the correct rendering of the vision, and it cannot be bettered, and if I keep touching it, I will make it worse... That's where I have to be with a record before I let it go.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, just from a practical standpoint, it's the same amount of like razzle dazzle, put the album together, do the tour for a record that fucking sucks.
Right.
Than it is for something that you like.
Of course, you need like, to be so proud of
yeah,
it.
You have to,
yeah,
you have to be, or else, like, what is the point?
Right.
Like, what is the point of putting out like mediocre drivel?
Yeah. You have to do what feels so authentic to you
yeah.
and so real. In order to do your style, part of your style is improvisation. You know, you do a lot of improvising. And in order to do that, it takes a lot of confidence. Now, is this confidence innate? Is it something that you've built over the years? Because it takes a certain inner strength to be able to do your own thing.
When you say improvisation, which kind do you mean? Musically?
Yeah, both. Actually, I think musically... Technically, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Literally, you improvise technically.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like literally. But that's even just doing that is brave. You have to feel confident that you can just kind of go off the cuff and just be in the moment and feel.
Yeah.
You know, you probably don't even think of it that way because it's just natural to you.
Well, I mean, the case is that like anything that is codified into record form was an improvisation at some point. You know,
yeah.
You just kind of like pick the best improvisations and go, okay, yeah, there's a song.
Right,
this
right,
has a song.
Right.
But as far as confidence. You know, Annie B said something to me. I thought that was really interesting. She's like, the best performers are the ones who have a secret. The best performers are the ones who don't want to be on stage. And I was like, oh, well, I kind of fit into that. You know, it's not that I don't want to be on stage. It's that it is, I'm not a person who, oh, that's cool. I'm not a person who's like, I don't know. I don't need to be the center of attention off stage in any kind of way. I have a particular kind of level of success, which is that I can 100% walk down the street and be fine. And some people might come up and be like, hey, I'm a big fan. And we have a nice chat and it's great. But like, I'm able to move through the world and meet strangers who do not know what I do and have actual human interactions that are not transactional.
Yeah.
Not put on. And my favorite thing in the world is to just like, you know, end up at a bar in New York, like having dinner by myself and like strike up a conversation next to the person next to me who doesn't know what I do and doesn't know any, and to watch people be like so excited to like talk about their life.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's awesome.
And like you see their version of their story and you kind of wonder like, oh, I wonder how much of that is, you know, what's how much of that is factual and you know how much of that is like and that's so interesting. And I've found that the second anything turns to like, oh, and what do you do, I'm a musician, and you start to change the bubble is burst and suddenly people are like on guard, they're uncomfortable, they don't know how to, and let's just be people.
Right.
That's
right.
Nice.
We're having
nice
a human conversation here. Let's just keep that going. That's really interesting.
Yeah, that's, I like that.
You do a really good job. You know, we live in a world where people tend to overshare as the default.
Yeah.
And you really do keep it private, which I completely respect and understand. It's obviously a conscious choice. Like what, How does this current state of affairs in the world make you feel, you know?
Well, I put my whole life into my records. Mm-hmm. And even on records where I've been more obsessed with or interested in the idea of persona and deconstructing persona and this iconography and that iconography, it's all still, the records are just still me. It's still the sound of the inside of my head. It's about exactly what I'm going through at the time, and I put it into the work. So in that way, like, it's, that's so intimate. Like, that's
the most intimate.
The most intimate thing. And so I have a, it's not, this record, however, you know, it's not, I'm not really, like, deconstructing persona or dealing with that. It's more just, like, this is life and death and love, and that's all we got. So, like, I'll bleed out. You bleed out too, and we're gonna figure out how to get through this impossible life,
right?
Because we get to live it, and also, we're all born screaming. We are all in this together. So much of modern life is designed to fracture us, to put us into different camps, to put, you know, pit neighbor against neighbor, blah blah blah, all that stuff. It's like, the human condition, it's all of it. It's beauty and brutality. So how do we make sense of it? What do we do?
Yeah.
What do we do? Because we still have to live and we get to. And right. Life is fucking short.
Yes.
So my long answer is just that on a practical level, I don't want to have a roadmap to my songs and go, this is what everything's about. Not because I would hate sharing, but because it could rob the listener of their experience.
Right.
Like it could
polysemy. It's like you put the music out.
What's this word?
It means it's something that is just kind of have different, open to interpretation. So yeah. By you putting the song out, you're allowing it to be to have people polysemy. People, it means this to this person. It means this to this person. About you telling them what it actually means.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that feels more generous to me.
Yeah.
Because it's for other people now. It's Aww. Not for me. I did.
You
I did
it.
It.
And now you're putting it out.
Yeah,
yeah, I get
it's,
that.
It's for you and you bring your whole life to it. And that's the most beautiful thing. And that's why music is so generative and so fractal to infinity is like people bring themselves to it. They bring if you bring your whole self to it, people will meet you and they'll bring their whole selves to it. And it's not for me to go, you're not listening to that right.
Right,
you
right.
didn't get it.
You didn't get it.
So just... It's like, I don't need to narcissistically also, you know, point back to me every time someone, well, what about me?
Right.
I made the thing. It's for you.
Yeah, I get that.
Fuck me. I mean, it makes me a less good capitalist, but fuck that. I'd rather make art.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. You have co-written with some of the biggest stars, like in contrast.
Yeah.
In contrast... you have co-written massive songs with Olivia Rodrigo.
Yes.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I mean, these are arguably the biggest global superstars.
Yeah.
And you've written huge songs with them, Obsessed and Cruel Summer. What is it like working with them and being part of just such a song that just takes on its own life, you know?
Well, the Cruel Summer thing is such a testament to how amazing Taylor's fans are because they took a song that was from many records ago, wasn't a single, and they were like, no, we love this one. This one's a hit. And we're going to make it a hit. We're going to march it up the charts. They picked it. They
Wild.
Picked it. And I'm like, it's so amazing. They're like, you know, power and enthusiasm to just be like, this.
That's awesome.
We choose this. With Obsessed with Olivia, yeah, I mean, we, you know, me and Olivia and her writing partner and producer, Dan Nigro, we're in a room and wrote a song, you know, years ago. And then I was always a fan of it. I always thought it was so cool. And then it was a B-side on, or it was a deluxe edition of on Guts. But I think... she's so psyched about the song that she was like, no, let's shoot a video for
That's
this.
Great.
Let's do it. So, and I love that song. It's great. So it's amazing. It was amazing to be kind of side stage watching Cruel Summer take off and having some, you know, small part in that. And then, you know, to watch
That's
Olivia
so
grow.
Awesome. That's really, really cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
What do you think is like the like superpower, you know, of like Olivia and Taylor? Like, what do you think it is about them?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think for Olivia, I think she's so just completely tapped into what she's really, like, going through, what it's like to be, you know, 19, 20, 21. And she's just writing about all of that stuff very, very honestly. I mean, I think Taylor's like just a force of nature.
Yeah.
You don't come across those in the wild. Like that's
right.
She's just a full force of nature and so works so incredibly hard and
that's
a force of nature.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's a certain breed, you know?
Yeah.
It's a certain breed. I saw this thing about you that you were sharing that you collect these like food candles.
Yes.
Yes. There was like a beautiful tart and there was like a brie and there was like a hot dog. And I saw the picture.
Mm-hmm.
But what I saw in this picture
was
a Janet Jackson bust.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was like zeroing in on.
Janet, my modern day queens. Janet and Erica. Mic drop.
Incredible. Yeah,
done.
Mic drop.
Like, that's it. So,
yeah.
You know.
Also both fashion icons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like style, of course.
Oh.
Yeah.
Erica is a Dallas girl, too.
Oh.
I'm from Dallas, so I feel I feel some love there. And I think I read, I think it was like a New Yorker profile or something where it's like, she has a personalized license plate, Erica, that's she bad. I was like, that's so cool.
That is amazing.
God, it's she my, bad. I'm just going to put it into the ether. It is my dream to work with Erica Badu.
Oh, amazing.
If you ever talk to her, yeah. Just like tell her I said what's up. Anyway.
Let's put it out there.
Let's put it out there.
That would be amazing.
Anything. I love her. The bust is from a great artist named Donald Mitchell. And I have some of his work. I've collected some of his work. And I also have a bust of Cece Winans.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. Cece got a little bit homophobic, so she's not on a pedestal right now, but I still love her. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
People of a certain age.
And I recently saw Madonna on her Celebration tour.
Oh, my God. I saw it opening night in London. I took my sister. I wept the whole time.
Oh, my God. I don't think I anticipated how I was going to react.
Me neither.
First of all, I regressed into like a child, I feel like. I was like,
yes.
I appreciated it in such a way. She, oh my God.
I know.
She's just, you know, she is a rock star. You know, yeah. She's a trailblazer. I mean, if you think about like what she has accomplished, 4 decades mm-hmm. worth, and she's just continued to reinvent herself this entire time.
Yeah.
You know?
And you know what I love about Madonna? One of many things, like Live to Tell.
Oh, that one.
Just wept.
I was
just
hysterically
wept,
crying.
Wept tears.
Hysterical.
Watching the show, I realized how much of my like young sexuality was completely influenced by Madonna.
100%.
But also, she put out a sex book in the early 90s where she was posing with gay porn stars with HIV
up close.
And this is at a time when people were like, you're going to get AIDS from a toilet seat.
Right. Being in the same room. Yeah.
The queers deserve it. You know, there's all this hate and all this stuff. And she legitimately put herself out there for a community who was in the midst of a plague.
Yeah. She's punk rock. You know what I mean? Like, she is the real deal. At the time, I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew she was cool and I thought she was wild. But now even more, I look back and you see where we're at today.
Absolutely.
I'm like, oh, God, she's even so much more. She was so much even more brazen
than
I even knew at the time. You know?
Yes.
Like, brazen.
Brazen.
Yeah.
Brazen.
Yeah.
And she's
not, I mean, wow. Talk about true empowerment.
Yeah. And Madonna, you know what I also realized seeing her, you know, on stage, she's at 65 or something.
Yeah.
It's just like, she is sexy because she's fucking dangerous.
Yeah. Fierce.
She's sexy. She's not performing sexiness.
Right.
She's fucking sexy.
I agree.
Because it's scary. In a good way.
In the best way.
You're like, she's like, I will fuck you up.
Yeah.
I will fuck you.
And she just doesn't care. Nothing to lose. When she came out with the guitar burning up and just told the story about like CBGBs
totally.
The beer bottle. I'm like, I just love her.
I know.
I just love her because she really, like, there wasn't a pop star ever like that. Like,
no.
She didn't have any blueprints or anyone to look at.
No.
She just created something from nothing with, like, the clubs in New York coming from Michigan with handing out her mixtape, like, DIY punk rock style.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, she had that ethos.
Yep. East Village.
Yeah.
Getting roughed up.
Yeah.
Like,
whatever it takes.
Whatever
it takes.
You know,
she bled for it. It was all about her art. Whatever it takes. I just have the most respect for her. And seeing her that night for me was like, wow. I'll always remember that.
I can't even. It was so emotional.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time since I've gone to a show and not been like, oh, that production's interesting. Oh, I wonder why they, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything except just being completely emotionally in the moment.
Yeah.
It was,
being a fan.
Just being a fan.
Yeah. That's how I was. Ah.
Yeah.
I even wore like a rhinestone bustier. I was
committed.
I was committed. So.
Yeah.
another thing that we share was
bunny suit. Great.
I know. All right, let's do deep cuts. Okay. We'll make it just like a rapid fire. Okay. Name a song, album, or artist that changed your life.
You know what record I love and will always love? Tori Amos from the Choir Girl Hotel. Oh. It's a perfect record.
It's a perfect record.
And talk about production.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Guess who produced it? Tori Amos.
Yep. Amazing. Done. Mm-hmm. What was your first concert?
My first concert
that
I like was so excited about. And then I was Steely Dan.
Oh, wow.
Tour 94. So I was 12.
Wow.
Huge Steely Dan fan.
We might not. I don't know. Nostalgia.
I don't know if we're going to share that one. You were like, huh.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm like, for me, I was like, of course.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. That's so cool. You have so many different influences. I love it.
Yeah. The Dan.
Really cool. What's a song you wish you wrote?
God. I mean, so many. Let's see. Why don't we go Madonna? Why don't we go like a Prayer?
Yeah. Great.
Perfect pop song.
It is a perfect pop song. You're absolutely right. If you were not a musician, what would you be?
I would be a manual laborer. I would like to do something with my hands. I would like to build houses or like do electrical and plumbing.
Really?
And yeah, I like when things...
Do you like home projects? Do you do a lot?
Yeah. I do. I mean, I like when you can build something and it makes sense.
I love to assemble furniture.
Oh my God.
I get it.
I think I get to do that later today.
Oh my God.
I'm so excited.
I get high thinking about it. I love doing that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm the same way. Yeah. I love to create and accomplish things manually.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
And it's so satisfying.
It's so satisfying. And you see it and it's done.
And it's done.
I know.
And it's logical.
Right.
Music is not logical.
Exactly.
I love doing it.
It's another thing.
Yeah.
That's another thing we have. What's the greatest risk you've ever taken?
emotionally, physically, what are we talking here?
Whatever you wish to share.
There was a time on, I think it was the self-titled record, where I was going full Ed Ved on climbing shit. And I would, perform and just, climb. And I just wanted to be, 50 feet in the air and, dangling off.
From, scaffolding.
Yeah, climbing scaffolding.
Yeah.
And, probably shouldn't have. But in the moment you're just you have so much adrenaline and you just want to go wild.
Did you get injured?
No.
Oh,
that's fine.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I have been injured on stage.
Right.
I jumped off a stage in heels and didn't realize. Ooh. I was trying to get to the barricade to stage dive and I jumped off into an orchestra pit and I didn't realize that orchestra pit was 9 feet down.
Oh my God.
And I broke my left foot. Ugh. And I still... And I, it still kind of is a little wobbly, but whatever.
It's rock and roll. It's rock and roll.
Yeah.
Exactly. How would you define success?
How would I personally define success?
What does it mean to you?
I would say success for me means making work that I'm proud of and being a person for the people I love.
Oh. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's really, really special. What are words you live by?
Yeah, fuck it. They're all a bunch of cunts. Fuck them. How's that?
I love it. Don't let the bastards grind you down.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. Cheers to you. Cheers to you,
cheers.
Honestly.
Thank you so much.
What a delight.
Oh, geez.
We'll be right back. So good. Did St. Vincent and I just become best friends? I think so. I really feel connected with her, and I've been a fan for ages, but this album is definitely my favorite album yet, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Thank you so much for being part of the Allison Hagendorf Show, presented by Cloudwater. I want to give a huge thank you to our other partners as well, Danny Wimmer Presents, Sweetgrass Vodka, and Karma Sauce. And thanks to our friends at Arctic Zone, and most importantly, thanks to you. I would love to hear from you. So please like, comment, rate, review, whatever you're feeling, and reach out to me on socials at Allie Hagendorf. I'd love to connect with you. Let me know who I should interview next and what made you smile today. Thanks again. I'll see you next time. And remember, you're a rock star.